Blog Talk Radio.
Muslims who lost their lives at prayer in New Zealand yesterday, and it's beyond sad. It's another step in the world of fascism and intolerance, and we're going to cover a lot of it, and we're joined on the show by our colleague, Dr. Ray. Ray,
hi,
are you
Dave.
There?
I'm here, yeah. Just slid into home base, but I'm here.
Okay. Dr. Ray Working is the executive producer co-host of Homo Radio, heard locally at 91.5 in the Capital Region, Albany, Schenectady, Troy, and environs, and then everywhere online in the cyber world at WRPI.org. And Ray, your website is homoradio.org, and you can hear them on a variety of platforms: Apple TV, iTunes, TuneIn, and Ray, the one I always forget where you're archived.
We're archived on the homoradio.org.
Okay. I thought there was
there is another one. We're syndicated on Quest of Life Radio.
So everybody, please listen in on Sundays 10 to 2 and then on demand where you can. And Ray, I want to I think this is going to be a wide-ranging topic here and maybe a little rambling, but that's the times we live in. And I just want to start, I mean, we mentioned what happened in New Zealand yesterday, and you know, New Zealand seems a long way off, but it might as well be down the street for what's happening. And I saw something that just chilled me even more, if it's possible. You know, I think with this Trump Russia thing, as he says, we lose sight of the overall picture, and some diplomat put it in words that I think everybody can understand, is that Trump is owned by Putin. He's been groomed since the 1980s. He's been compromised, and whether even Trump is smart enough to know it, Putin owns him and has infected him with these ideas of nationalism and hatred, which certainly includes the LGBTQ community. And basically what Putin does, what Russia does, is they find these candidates in other countries and they infect them. They compromise them, and then they inject them into the system, into the United States, for example, into our culture, into our politics. And it's an old KGB trick, and it's working well for them, and it's very scary because I don't know what you think, Ray, but I don't think Trump has given up a drop of power unless he kills us all, or something like that. And by Trump, I mean Trump and Putin. Have you given that dismal thought any consideration, Ray?
I'm extremely concerned, and I'm equally concerned that I don't know if other people, the predominant populace, has a clue as to the geopolitical dangers that we're in right now. I think we're as close to the end as a Cuban Missile Crisis when I was in the ninth grade, and I feel those same pangs of pain in my stomach. I really do.
Yeah. I mean, we're getting ready for an election, and there are lots of Democratic candidates jumping in the pool and talking. And, I want to be hopeful. But, honestly, is it going to be any different than 2016? Nothing has been done to prevent another hacking, another takedown of the American system, our cyber optics, our cyber security. Elections are not protected. And I don't know. I guess I don't want to think about it, but if we don't think about it, we're gonna have four more years of Trump, which I just cannot. I cannot imagine. And so bad is I just wanted to also mention, people may have heard of Brexit, which is the United Kingdom deciding to separate from the European Union, and that's all in the news. It's one big gigantic mess, and they voted to leave, but now they don't know how to do it. And that is another Putin job, because really it's based on fear of immigrants, fear of the other, fear of anybody who doesn't have white skin. Does that sound familiar in America? Trump and his damn wall. That's the brown menace he's fighting. And it really rings true to bigots and the worst in us. So put it together. The thing yesterday in New Zealand, people sort of claiming, thanking Trump, the perpetrators thanking Trump, and then England falling to pieces. I mean, this is how World War starts. Or world takeovers, which I can't even imagine. But when I understood the relationship more, when I understand the relationship more between Putin and Trump and how they did it, and how feckless our response has been. I mean, Ray, you wrote this week about why isn't Nancy Pelosi going to do impeachment? And I thought about it, and I said, well, maybe she's right. No, she's not right. That madman will do anything soon. He's a danger every minute he's in office. And, when Nixon was impeached, they didn't have the goods on him when they started it. It was only until the last minute when they got the tapes and they found the smoking gun on Nixon. That was when he was going to get impeached, not before. And all of this is going to lead to our topic of the day, which is Trump's assault on LGBT. But Ray, what do you think about impeachment and Pelosi saying no?
I've had quite a few runarounds and go-arounds discussing this with people. And I don't know where you stand on it because we didn't do a pre-production show. I was furious. I really was. And I'll tell you why. The analogy for me is, as a principal of a school, if I decide that a student by, let's say, 11th grade is so obnoxiously uncontrollable that we will just decide that he will graduate no matter what happens, no matter what the behavior, no matter what the transcripts, no matter what the results on the Regents exams, because that's what they're doing now. He's just not worth it, to quote Nancy Pelosi. What if, as a principal or a department chair, I said, this individual has caused so much trouble for the last K to 10 years that we're just going to get him through and get him out. We're not going to examine what he did, whether he passed or he failed, whether he committed, you know, acts of brutality or bullyism or God knows what, theft, because he's not worth it. He's going to move on. And I can't accept that. That sets precedent that completely destroys any modicum of fairness, of any threshold of, you know, requirements. And it's to, I guess, my long convoluted answer to your question is, I was very upset by it. I get her motivation. I get it well. She feels that it's just going to divide us more, and it's going to, you know, energize his base, and they're going to come back at us, as Trump has said, because we're in trouble, because the thugs and the bikers don't come get us, David. They're going to come right out and get you. They're going to come out here in a wicked little town, carry me out. I mean, he's been telling everybody. So, and I'm not kidding. I mean, it just came across the news before the podcast. You know, he's threatening for the third time now. There will be violence on the part of his base if the Democrats continue their behavior. How does one filter that through a prism? You tell me.
I don't got no answers. I've never thought this would happen, but it has. It is. And I think a lot of people are in denial. I'm still in a certain amount of denial, but there's never going to be a peaceful transfer. As Michael Cohen testified, Trump will never give up that office. He will contest any election results. He'll do everything he can, and Putin's got a whole bag of tricks to consolidate power and further intimidate. I mean, Putin was famous for housing bombings in Chechnya, and I believe that's where it happened, where he orchestrated the bombings of these apartment buildings, women, children, killed. And he blamed, of course, some enemy, the other. And he came in as the hero, and his approval ratings went up, and don't think that can't happen here. Because, you know, you and I lived through 9/11, and I think there's that's never been fully explained. We've buried that one away, but in a lot of ways, it's affecting us today. I think 9/11 was the precursor to nationalism and you know, blaming the other. And we fought the wrong war. We went to Iraq, not Afghanistan, where the hijackers came from, and they were Saudis. And I mean, it's so crazy. And now the Trumps are not in bed. They're screwing the Saudis, taking their money. Jared Kushner is the chief thief and criminal in that White House, profiting by trillions of dollars from the Saudis and protecting them. And this is like epic corruption. And we've, you know, I look around at people just trying to get through the day. I mean, this stuff is, what did Hitler say? The bigger the lie, the easier it is to get it past people. And I think that's what's happening now. You know, the you talk to anybody, have any conversation with anybody, you're going to be called a lunatic if you start talking that, you know, Trump is anything but a saint and the American hero. So anyway, Ray, and last night Chelsea Clinton somehow got blamed. I can't even follow this. Chelsea Clinton, she's having another baby, and she went to a rally to support the people who were murdered in New Zealand, and she got confronted. I mean, we're spinning out of control fast, Ray. And I wish I had some answers, but I don't. Mm-hmm. But I do want to talk about how this affects our LGBT community. And I want to start off with the Trump's vicious attack on transgender military. His second ban, he doesn't give up. He goes after the, you know, the Muslims with his Muslim ban. Like the first day he's in office, that gets rejected twice. But he comes up with a third plan that passes muster. Well, the same thing has happened with the transgender military ban. He's now on version 2.0. And this week the Supreme Court seemed to defer to it. And basically what it'll do, it'll mean the discharge of 13,000 transgender troops, according to the advocate. And just a real kick in the stomach to anybody concerned with human rights, transgender people, and people will die because of this. You know, transgender kids in school, they'll be bullied. I don't know, Ray. Any thoughts on? I don't like to throw fire, but this is just the reality that kids are gonna.
Well,
I mean, these are the most vulnerable of our youth, the transgender youth, and the soldiers are going to. You know, it's a disaster for them. And you know, the funny thing is, I don't think Trump really believes this. Knowing him from New York, he really wasn't a very smart guy. As a matter of fact, he was a Democrat for a while. And whatever you heard from him, it was, well, he's tough, but he doesn't really have any thoughts about issues like this. Well, now that Putin's got his hand up his butt, he's suddenly got views, and he's got to play to his base, as they say. Which won all this crap? Any thoughts, Ray?
Well, I do. I have a lot of thoughts. I think I don't think I've ever been so introspective in my life, because I look back at this quote unquote base. If I never heard the word again, it would be too soon. And I realize that roughly 40% of the individuals that we grew up with were horrific racist, homophobes, misogynistic folks. And I look at people in my generation, everyone I think on the podcast knows that I'm 70, and I just will put it out there. What happened to the, you know, to the anti-war generation? What happened to the flower children? What happened to the passion that moved us when I was in the seventh grade from going into the, I didn't go in the Peace Corps, but that was my dream when I was 12. And now we've descended into this sewer. We've devolved into this civil war of words. And he's trying to elevate it, he being the Trump, to, you know, to literally physical violence. I mean, I don't think anything has disturbed me as much as that in his whole presidency. I mean, he's openly saying the bikers will be there. This is like post Stonewall, when, you know, I think it was Monterey, the, all the nonviolence in Stonewall, Woodstock, in 1969, you know, Woodstock, except for the problem with the brown Kool-Aid and things, had those happenstances. They didn't have violence, and they fast-forwarded and brought the bikers in, and oh, there was all this violence. And to me, that's a paradigm for what Trump is saying. And I think he means this. I think he is so deranged and such a narcissistic sociopath. And you've been on this for a long time. The only thing that matters, obviously, is him. My anger with him, it's evolving now into just blatant fear, because I don't know what can stop this. I feel like we're in war games. And DEFCON 1 is coming closer and closer. And unless somebody punches that code in, figures out the code that was Falcon based on his son that died, if you remember that movie. That's what I think about. I think the clock is running out. And somebody is going to have to come up with a plan or a code to stop this man. And in the meantime, we're losing all this funding for HIV/AIDS. And Betsy DeVos, the Secretary of Health, is destroying our public school systems brick by brick. I mean, David, when does someone realize that the road we're going down? Or maybe do you think that they do see it? I don't believe they have any night vision. I don't believe they realize that an 18-wheeler, to draw an analogy, is coming right at what's left of this democracy.
Yeah, I mean, the tale of, is there not one person in this whole government who's not corrupt or incompetent or both? I mean, I saw, this is a guy who I think has run under everybody's radar screen. He could be second in corruption to Jared Kushner, but Wilbur Ross, sounds like a name and a character out of Hooterville or the Beverly Hillbillies, and he looks it. And he's 80 years old, stinking rich, and he is the Commerce Secretary, and he played. Hey, guess what his job was? He was a banker at Deutsche Bank, and I am confident. I mean, you have to be a child not to see the connection that he was helping Russia funnel money to Trump, launder money through Trump, and he's 80 years old and he gets this petty nothing job at the Commerce Department, Commerce Secretary. I mean, he's rich beyond, we used to say rich as Croesus, a rich Roman emperor, who stole money for his wealth. But Wilbur Ross was hauled in front of Congress today, this week, and asked by a Democrat to resign because Wilbur Ross is in charge of the census, the 2020 census, which is a really important, all census events are really important because, you know, they go toward voter information and where people live so that monies can be allocated. It's key to keeping the current party in power if they choose to do so. So Wilbur Ross has been accused of voter suppression in getting the 2020 census out there, and I've received my copy of it. It's a very, you know, people see the census as a nothing burger, as they say, but it is very important. And this guy, Wilbur Ross, who, I mean, there's a line in my old favorite movie, Chinatown, where John Huston is playing a real power game. Water was the big issue in Southern California, and he's he's well into his 80s, and he's trying to manipulate, and he's trying to manipulate the water allocation and the building of reservoirs. And some investigator gets it, and he gets to him, and he says, "How much money you got?" Oh, and Houston said, "Oh, well, more than I could ever need." And so why are you doing this? And he stopped, John Houston stops and says, "Well, the future. I'm doing it for the future." I mean, he wants power from beyond the grave. And I looked at Wilbur Ross, and people should just Google him because he's filthy, filthy, and he is affecting your life on an everyday basis, and he's stealing money. He's setting it up so the next 10 years will be more Republican power. And I mean, the cast of characters, not only should Trump be impeached, every damn one of these cabinet officers should be impeached. From Betsy DeVos, who she might not be the most corrupt, you know, right?
I've researched a lot on her too. I refer to her in my posts as the Amway Queen, which she came into from the marriage. I mean, this woman, you know that her classmates did everything possible to make the world aware of not only how much she's lacking in intelligence, but the degree of vitriolic hatred this woman has. I mean, she is right there. She wants to take the LGBTQ and erase them from the face of the earth. She really does. When you use the word erased in that iconic movie now, Boy Erased, she wants to erase all of us. And they knew that. I mean, she and Pence, we are dealing as at the top of the show, you know, saying how much, you know, what does the LGBTQ have to say plus on this, you know, on what's happening. And every week I try to drive it home. The reason we're talking politics so much is because our LGBTQ plus community has so much at stake. If Trump is elected, and if someone had a gun to my head right now, David, God forgive me, but I think that man's going to serve another 4 years. And I don't believe we're going to have a democracy left, let alone an environment. And I'm accused of overstating. I think I'm understating. What do you think?
I'm dazed, and I'm in a state of shock because, you know, you don't want to believe this stuff. You got to get up and do your work every day. But for people who, you know, I've had Facebook wars over stupid little things. You criticize another Democratic candidate, and you get accused of not supporting the party versus Trump. I said, listen, are we going to lose free speech too? We can't talk about our views on other people. And of course, I'm going to vote for the Democratic candidate. If it matters. Ray, I want to take a brief pause here because while we're on the topic of eroding of rights and, eroding of LGBT rights, particularly transgender rights and dignity, I want to read from my book, just a short section on healing the brain, stress, trauma, and LGBTQ youth, which is our sort of signature publication, about what all of this does to our health. And this is a segment contributed by Dr. Bill Buffy, our medical consultant, and we thank him for contributing this. This is what he wrote about internalizing prejudice. A sexual minority status, as explained by Riggle and Rostovsky, is defined by a culture of devaluation, including overt and subtle prejudice and discrimination one that creates and reinforces the chronic everyday stress that interferes with optimal human development and well-being. LGBT individuals stigmatized by negative societal attitudes directed at the essence of their being struggle on a daily basis to balance the dual dangers of publicly engaging their need for equality and validation and remaining closeted to find some calm through an escape from public scrutiny. Many gay persons internalize such discrimination and prejudice. Fractured social support mechanisms and minority stress associated low self-esteem contribute to a high prevalence of self-destructive behaviors such as substance abuse, suicide, and risky sexual behavior. Hotzenbuehler studied more than 34,000 lesbian, gay, and bisexual participants and found empirical evidence of the negative health effects of discriminatory policies related to marriage equality. They surveyed participants in 2001 and 2002 on a range of psychological health indicators, and they administered the same survey in 2004 in 2005, after 14 states approved constitutional amendments limiting marriage to opposite-sex unions. In the second set of responses, participants reported significantly higher rates of psychiatric disorders, with increases of 36% for any mood disorder, 248% for generalized anxiety disorder, 42% for alcohol use disorder, and 36% for psychiatric comorbidity. In the comparable control group from states without such amendments during the same time period, there were no significant increases in these psychiatric disorders. And what Dr. Buffy is mentioning, is referring to here, is in the run-up to the election in 2004, George W. Bush, part of the paradigm for creating Trump. George W. Bush and his hack, Karl Rove, got several key states, I remember Ohio, one of them, to put amendments on the ballot for that would appear on the same ballot for president that called for a ban against same-sex marriage, and they ginned up the bigots who came out, of course, voted for Bush, and really basically won the election for Bush. And you could see the numbers, the anxiety, the substance abuse, the psychiatric disorders going off the chart. And absolutely, that has to be happening now, because it just is. It just is. So I want to urge people, if you're interested in this topic, I hope you will. If you're a parent of a gay youth, if you're a gay youth yourself, if you're a teacher, if you're a minister, you need this book. And you can get it on Amazon. It's Healing the Brain, Stress, Trauma, and LGBTQ Youth. You can search my name, David Balog, and that'll get you there. Or you can go to our website, which is healingthebrainbooks.com. It's healingthebrainbooks.com. It's very reasonably priced, under $10, and you can be armed with facts as you face the hostility. So Ray, so much to talk about, and yet, doesn't it get exhausting?
It does, and you know, I have to admit, when you say that, I hate to admit it, but I'm experiencing political fatigue at this point. I can only watch so much of MSNBC. And, you know, it wasn't that long ago. I wouldn't miss a minute. And if I did, I'd tape it and watch it. It's repetitive. It's going nowhere. And I'm feeling this fatigue. I have to get away from it. I literally have to get away from it. And I think that's what you were describing a while back.
Yeah, I found myself watching like 3 hours of it every day, and it is madness. It is utter madness. And I think one guy on Facebook described it, Andy Hum, who is a longtime gay reporter, and you know, I have my issues with him too, but he said, you know, he can't stand Chris Matthews. Chris Hayes, to me, these are the MSNBC commentators. Chris Hayes just speaks English like it's second language and repeats himself. And then the ultimate queen of repetition is Rachel Maddow, who must tell you 10 times the same thing. And those are just style things, but they're losing, they're in the weeds, you know. They just, I guess they have no choice. But I do have to. CNN. I tried listening to Mario Cuomo or Chris Cuomo, and he's a piece of work too. Everything is prosecutorial, and he has Kellyanne Conjob on just way too many times for my taste, and it's unwatchable. It's just unwatchable. I will have to, for the time being, give credit to, I don't know if you watch this show, Ray, but at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and you know, then repeated later, is this show from of all things, a former Bush communications director, Nicole Wallace, and she does it very well. She really does, in the sense that she's calm, she's emotive. When something strikes her as just completely off the wall with Trump, she expresses it, she says why, and she has very interesting guests. So you don't hear an hour's worth of, like, you know, Rachel will just speak nonstop for 20 minutes and, a nightmare.
I was going to say, I don't know anybody who's a fan of her, and I've considered of myself a big one, who hasn't come out with that same observation. And I guess it's the professor, the teacher in me. I mean, when I'm up there, I have to repeat because it's part of successful teaching. But she's not a teacher. She's a journalist, a TV journalist. And you got to rein it in sometimes, you know? You really do.
Yeah, yeah. And just to make it a little weirder, I just got to say, can she wear a different color than black every night? I get the feeling there's something really weird going on with this woman. And can't
did you
can her
did
girlfriend
you
buy
it? Well, speaking of buying it, I'm sorry for interjecting, but did you happen to hear it the night that she actually calibrated how much her outfit cost? Now, whether this is true or not, I certainly don't know. But she said it costs $14 for the jacket and $4 for the T-shirt, and that's all she spends. And then she said it with great delight. I had to laugh out loud because it's probably true.
it is. One night she accidentally wore a jacket that was dark blue instead of black, and she made great effort to say, that was a mistake. I will never wear that jacket again. That was just done by grabbing the wrong thing. I'm back to black tomorrow. And I went, oh, that's just weird behavior. I'm sorry. It's weird. It's weird. And that's why I don't know. Nicole Wallace is probably, I'd hate her politics. I mean, anybody who supported Bush is got a lot of explaining to do. But she's really on to Trump. She gets what's going on. And when she's famous for, you know, she worked with Sarah Palin on McCain's campaign, and she refused to vote because of that experience. And she kind of saw Palin as a precursor to Trump. But, you know, at least she wears nice dresses and she changes them every day and she looks pretty. And what, I mean, really, I know lesbians who, I mean, they worship Rachel, worship her, but damn it, can they buy her a different color jacket or maybe a gray shirt?
You know, a lot of people say that that's insignificant, what you're saying, and I'm there with you, but maybe not for the same reason, or maybe it is. I'm bothered by the focused audience on Rachel that doesn't expand. Yes, she gets the highest ratings, but how many people who are going to be important in the next election are really watching MSNBC? I feel like we're on the head of a pin, just like the other group is on a head of a pin, and neither the twain will jump from one pin to the other. And that bothers me because Russia just doesn't, in collusion, doesn't excite it for my stupid homophobic classmates. They don't care, David. They just don't care. They don't know. I don't know what those wonderful social studies teachers who were left and union leaders failed to teach them, because they were wonderful people, and they've turned out at least half of my class that I wouldn't have lunch with on the last day of my life. Because, and I know it sounds strong, David, and I don't know how you feel about your classmates, but boy, my high school group has really let me down. I'm very, very disappointed in them.
Well, you know, I had only one interaction with my high school group after 40 years, and, you know, they were supportive in a way, but very, very limited. And I know where their heads are at. I mean, they live in the comfortable padded world of the idle rich. You know, I'm sure some will say they work for their money, but they're not tuning into MSNBC. I know that. And you're right. I agree that MSNBC preaches to the converted, and so that's why. It's going to take a bomb. It's going to take, not literally a Trump bomb, but to somehow find a way to communicate the danger of this guy. But it's like an iron dome, you know, like the Israelis have. He's totally protected. Trump is totally protected by ignorance and fear, and he exploits it to the max, and what happens on MSNBC stays on MSNBC.
You got it.
I believe, yeah. But I hope that I just don't know. I do recommend this Nicole Wallace, in the sense that I know she's a Republican. And if she's outraged, then that tells me something. And her audience, I think, is sort of moderate Republicans. And if there are any of those left, she does do a very good show. I think it's easy to watch. It's clear. And she, as I said, you know, she wears different colored dresses. And I've been taking to calling Rachel Morticia, you know.
Oh, I've thought
without, yeah, without the flair. I mean, it all doesn't mean anything except we're screwed. But listen, Ray, we have to close up shop here. And I want to thank you for your time. And listen to Ray, Sundays, WRPI.org. And visit us at 1000moms.org. And we'll talk to you, everybody, next time. Thank you.
Happy St. Patrick's Day. Have a great afternoon.
Yeah.